Okay, the mics are live. I would like to call this study session to order on Monday, May 7th, 2018. The time is now 9 a.m. We have much on the agenda today, and so we're going to try to stay on time. The first item on our study session agenda is graduation guidelines update. We have allocated 30 minutes to that. It's a topic that it's a great topic that could take a lot more than that, so I'm going to ask that we try to stay on task here and do this in a half an hour. Board of Education will begin with this update on state graduation guidelines. Board ends two states. Every school and the district will ensure that every student has the opportunity to work towards being connected to career, college, and/or life aspirations, with the expectation that every student will demonstrate a year or more of growth on their way to mastery of the Colorado academic standards. Every student will be able to apply and transfer learning across disciplines and real-world contexts, critical thinking and creative thinking competency. Every student will have the opportunity and expectation to demonstrate leadership attributes. Every student will communicate effectively in a variety of formats and situations. The communications competency. We have pretty high expectations, don't we? And that's a good thing. In September of 2015, the Colorado State Board of Ed approved the Colorado graduation guidelines. Each district is to ensure that the local graduation requirements meet or exceed the Colorado graduation guidelines. Dr. Glass, would you like to add anything to that introduction before we begin?
I would, just briefly. Most graduation requirements have been built on old Carnegie unit systems that are time-based systems. So it's kind of how many minutes your butt is in the chair, and did you earn a D-minus or a very low level of quality in that to earn that credit. And if you accumulate enough of those Carnegie units, we historically have said you've acquired enough knowledge to graduate. This is really a statewide effort to imbue some competency-based elements into graduation to say beyond just the seat time and the D-minus or higher requirements and accumulating those Carnegie units, can you demonstrate mastery or readiness for college and career through a variety of different ways? Some of those are standardized measures and some of them are performance demonstrations. These are really good conversations for us to be having as a system. And the most interesting ones, I think, have been what do the performance demonstrations look like? And so the team here is going to talk to you some about that. We're really proud of the work that they've been doing.
Thank you, Dr. Glass, and I'm assuming that I get away with turning this over to Mr. Flores, and you can introduce our guest presenters today and that sort of thing.
Happy to do so. Good morning. My name is Matt Flores, Chief Academic Officer, and I'll quickly introduce our team, but if you would just kind of raise your hand as your name is mentioned. Jeff Fujita, Executive Director of Curriculum and Instruction. Scott Bain, Principal of Jeffco Open School. Michael James, Principal at Jefferson High School. Wes Paxton, Principal at Conifer, and Andy Geis, Principal at Pomona. Thank you all for joining us today. It's our pleasure to update you on the progress our team has made to ensure that students will be prepared to meet the graduation guidelines in place for our current freshman class or the class of 2021. Gaining credits towards graduation, as Dr. Glass mentioned, has always been an opportunity for students to demonstrate what they have learned in high school. Now, with the menu options for students to demonstrate readiness, graduation includes opportunities for students to select an additional way to demonstrate career or college readiness that matches their pathway. For example, students can demonstrate proficiency in industry, through college courses, or through a variety of other assessments. As student programming has become more individualized, so have the options for demonstration of career and college readiness. As we started down the road to determine what we will need to be successful based on our new graduation requirements, we first looked at the Colorado SAT average scores from 2016-2017. Note that the graduation guidelines are not about a school's average. Instead, we look at individual student scores. We only use this data point to give us a frame of reference as to where Jeffco students might fall in reference to these new requirements. As you can see, when we only consider the SAT cut scores in math and English reading and writing, not all JAFCO students meet the criteria for using this measure to demonstrate readiness for graduation. 36% of our students would need to consider a different option from the menu of options in math and 26% in English reading and writing. There are 10 options for students to consider in each English and math. Our team today will walk you through some of the options available for our students and share the progress we have made in developing tools and resources to support this important work for implementation with the class of 2021 or our current freshman students.
Good morning. The menu of options has several assessments besides the SAT, and these options have varying benefits and challenges. The AccuPlacer is a free college placement test for our community colleges. This is a test from College Board, the same vendor as the SAT. If students are going to enroll in a concurrent enrollment class, they take the AccuPlacer. It can be administered at the local community college or at our schools. It's a computerized test that assesses reading, writing, math, and computer skills, and sequentially builds up in difficulty. The ACT, while no longer required by the state of Colorado, is still an option for students with national testing dates in September, October, December, February, April, June, and July, with testing locations throughout the state. The fee is $46, and if they take the writing component, it's $62.50. ACT does offer a fee waiver options, and students register to take the ACT via the ACT website. The ACT Work Keys is an assessment that tests students' job skills in applied reading, writing, mathematics, and 21st century skills. The scores are based on job profiles that help employers select, hire, train, develop, and retain high performance workforce. This is an assessment that's usually offered at workforce centers, although it's not as common in Colorado as it used to be. Some school districts offer this on a limited basis in their alternative schools. This assessment must be given in the testing center format with the same level of security as the ACT. It usually requires an FTE dedicated in supporting students through an online curriculum to prepare for the assessment. Andy Geis, principal from Pomona, will share how they are looking at using career and college readiness assessments with the ASVAB. You do.
Okay, here we go. Good morning. Thank you for inviting me to the study session. I appreciate it. At Pomona High School, we did look at having our junior class take the ASVAB test. In the past, we'd have maybe 9 or 10 students who would take it. Mainly those students were students who were interested in the military. So we saw it as a grad requirement option. So we said, why don't we see? I mean, specifically, it was for us just to see how successful will our students be in hitting that standard or exceeding that standard. So instead of testing 9 or 10 11th graders as usual, we tested 210 out of our class of 346, and we found that 69% of those students met or exceeded the score of a 31 necessary to meet the grad requirements. We broke the data down through demographics, male, female, IEP students, Hispanic, African-American, Asian, male and female, like I said, and I can share more information on that. But we were real pleased with the results. We're also exploring how we can connect that to students' ICAPS, perhaps to our AVID program, just talking to them more about their futures and what they want to do. It is an opt-in exam, meaning if they don't want the military to have their results or to recruit them, they would physically have to check a box to opt in for the military to be able to recruit them. So it's an opt-in exam, which is important to a lot of the parents in my accountability committee. So it's good. I can share more information if you want.
What were the most surprising findings or?
It wasn't a surprise.
Sorry. Well, so I was wondering, like, is it the same people, 69% that did well on that would do well in other areas? That's what I was, or were you surprised with any of your results?
That's what I need to dig in a little bit more on this, the individuals. Is it, like you said, is it the same 70% who would score well on an SAT, who would score well on an AP, who are going to pick up the dual credit through a college class? I thought initially the most surprising data that came forward was, I guess it wasn't surprising that IEP students didn't do well on it. It was a little bit. I would hope that they would have done better on it, but our Hispanic students also did not perform as highly, so I was just wondering why. We could dig in and find out why that is. It's a battery of 9 tests, and each test has a different time length to it. Some tests are 11 minutes, some tests are 24. But the 4 tests that count to the score are arithmetic reasoning, word knowledge, paragraph comprehension, and mathematics knowledge. So it's not as rigorous as an SAT, but I think the questions are still pretty challenging. I was looking at some sample questions, and I thought, I'll be able to knock these out, but I started sweating. I was struggling on a couple of them, so I was like, it's not as easy as I thought.
Mr. Geis, do you have a comparison with the number of students who would have reached the SAT cutoff if 69 was ASVAB? It'll be important, I think, to have that info when you have the comparison, since we're attempting to find out what bridges gaps for us.
That's a great point.
And then I'm just going to assume, which I hate to do, there's no accommodations in any of these tests for kids on IEPs in the same way there's no accommodations on any other standardized test.
Good point. Okay. No, there are not. It is a free exam. Proctors come right along with it, but yeah, no accommodations.
Thanks.
For the options beyond traditional assessments, we consider supports, structures, and resources for both a central lens and a school lens. From the central perspective, we discuss the commonalities. The state leaves it up to us to work with these items, and so we create a system of resources for all schools. We've been partnering with teachers and school leaders to identify common practices and expectations in order to ensure equity for readiness for all Jeffco students. Schools have the responsibility to create for their needs, and so they might determine which AP courses to offer. And then we partner to determine if those courses meet graduation requirements. So what we do is we take a look at each of these options. We're going to go a little bit deeper, and we have college-level coursework, industry certifications, and capstones. For college-level coursework, we have AP, IB, and concurrent enrollment. These provide different levels of readiness options for students. The research from College Board demonstrates that students in advanced placement courses are more likely to enroll in a 4-year college and likely to complete their college degree in the same area as the exam. AP students tend to earn higher grades throughout their college career. The research on international baccalaureate shows a positive association between the students' scores on a given IB subject exam and their grades in their first college courses in that subject. That is, students who perform better on IB subject exams tend to earn higher grades in their first college courses in those subjects than students who did not perform as well. Concurrent enrollment is a partnership with Jeffco Schools and the community college system. It's free of charge to students. College credits earned in our high schools, when a teacher meets the community college credentialing requirements. Some courses we like to have the guaranteed transfer. Classes can be taken at the community college campus or online. Considerations for moving forward is tomorrow we have an advisory team of 25 English and math teachers meeting to determine the common criteria for AP, IB, and college concurrent enrollment courses. And we're also providing central funding for teachers to help get the additional credits so that they could be highly qualified to meet the Higher Learning Commission. So Michael James from Jefferson High School is going to give his perspective on the AP work at Jefferson.
Thank you. Thank you. I will just like to start by saying our advanced placement program at Jefferson has increased in students taking those courses by 200% in the last 5 years. Right now, well, as of 2017's testing date, 30% of our high school kids were in one or more AP course. And it is very significant when you consider, yes, college credits are offered with a three or higher at several institutions, but we do have a large number of students that are scoring twos or higher, which would qualify students in some of the areas. And as Jeff said, there is a committee that's looking into which tests will be accepted for that qualification. I will say that advanced placement courses at our school with our FRL rate and our Hispanic rate has really served our students well in increasing the rigor and expectations for their coursework, which I believe, when you ask the question, which of these students that score a two or better would also qualify on the PSAT or SAT in this circumstance, I believe it's that rigorous coursework that's lifting them to that. So I do believe for us, it's AP courses scaffold the coursework that our students need to experience in order to reach those qualifying scores. Yeah, I think that's about it.
Thank you. With numbers like 74% of jobs requiring education beyond high school, be it a certificate, associate degree, or a college degree, we support our schools with industry certifications and have had 180 students earn qualifying certifications. An industry certification is a credential recognized by business and industry at the state, local, or national level. It could be an assessment, an examination, or a license that is administered and recognized by an industry third party or governing board. Industry certifications measure competency in an occupation, and they validate the knowledge base and skills that show mastery in a particular industry. School districts determine which certifications to authorize to students. We have formed an industry advisory team in partnership with industry, workforce, school, and central leadership to determine how we might align certifications to demonstrations of readiness in English and in math, and establish a process for including additional certifications. Wes Paxton, principal at Conifer High School, will speak to industry certifications at his school.
Thank you, Jeff, and thank you, Board of Education Superintendent, for allowing me to speak about the certification program at Conifer High School. As Jeff pointed out, this program allows our students to take a certificate they earn in high school and use it to apply for jobs or to use it for applying for college. Last year, we had 26 students who completed a certification program through our computer-aided drafting program. This year, we have 20 students on track to complete. Typically, the test costs $100 per student, but because we purchased the software and created a blended learning environment, the testing is free to all of our students who choose to take the test, and our school earns money through the grant, House Bill 16-1289. Our hope was to earn $1,000 per student. It was so popular this last year, we earned about $500 per student. That money was used to purchase the software for the testing, also a CNC machine and a 3D printer for our students to use for their drafting.
We've been partnering with our schools and school leaders to determine the common expectations for capstones, and Scott Bain, principal at Jeffco Open, will provide some further details.
Thanks for letting me speak about capstone projects. I know that several board members were able to make it to presentations about a month ago, so have some firsthand experience with this. What we value about having this as on the menu of options is that it is in alignment with the ideals articulated in JEPCO Generations. Capstone projects offer all students a way to demonstrate their academic and intellectual learning in a truly authentic way. Relevance and connections are created through self-selected topics that ask students to apply their learning to new and novel situations. Students are asked to demonstrate their learning through experience with the real world, and tie that to a variety of pathways to their future. As with all authentic tasks, the question, "Why do I need to know this?" is flipped such that the student has to ask, "In what ways can I put my learning to practical use?" During the 16-17 school year, a capstone committee was convened, and then this year, 17-18 school year, the team created a set of documents that would envision a system-wide consistency with capstone projects and how they're executed and evaluated. The team was representative of principals and central staff. The common expectations, all schools will have common documents that include a one-page overview, promising practices, a single-point rubric, a timeline for capstone implementation, and course possibilities. At Jeffco Open, we piloted the use of the single-point rubric for the passage presentations during our night of exhibitions, which, as I noted, many of you attended. Thank you. There are also two schools, which include Arvada High School and also the Open School, that are partnering with the Colorado Education Initiative to continue work in developing capstone models that can be scaled across the district. This work will begin in the 18-19 school year. Several Jeffco staff members, including principals and teachers, are working as fellows with the America Achieves to create an industry-based capstone. In several schools throughout the district, we'll be piloting the next wave of capstones, utilizing the documents and assessing their feasibility during the 18-19 school year, and we'll offer feedback on how those can be improved.
We've been partnering with school principals, programmers from IT, Jeremy Felker, and other school districts to determine the best path forward for tracking and displaying the completion of the new graduation requirement on the transcript. We agree with our school principals and counselors about tracking this information as a new workload for schools and central departments, and so we're figuring out ways to alleviate that as much as possible. This is a mock-up of what the transcript would look like to display the information as met or unmet.
So before we dive into questions, I wanted to take a moment to celebrate Jeffco's leadership across the state when it comes to graduation guidelines, specifically Jeff Fujita. When Jeff came into his role as Executive Director of Curriculum and Instruction, graduation guidelines were a hot topic across the state. Jeff quickly convened other leaders throughout the state to engage in a dialogue around what does this mean for your district. The state then joined that advisory group, and now districts throughout the state, and including the State Department of Education, frequently call Jeff and other members of our Jeffco team to say, how are you all interpreting this? So Jeff, I want to compliment you on your leadership and the work that you've done across Jeffco, but also across the state. And with that, we'll be do our best to answer any questions. Thank you.
I'd like to ask a question about the transcripts. And I'm glad to see that we're moving forward with that, but it looked like it was pretty general. Will we actually get more specific in terms of our transcripts and the wider variety of graduation requirements beyond credit?
So with the new requirement for English and mathematics, what we didn't want to do is have a full display on there and demonstrate to colleges and say, this student took the SAT and got this score, this student took the ACT and got this score, this one had the capstone, so it would be a laundry list of what they did or did not meet. What we wanted to do was demonstrate whether they met that in English and in mathematics. And so that was the determination that we came to with our committee to say the best way to do that is display it this way versus sending to colleges. The transcript could be used in lots of different ways, and so we decided to not send them the ways that they didn't meet that requirement versus the others. So we wanted to keep it general at this time. We're collecting all that information, so all the assessment information will be in the SOARS database. The capstones and concurrent enrollment will be in our Infinite Campus system, as will be the industry certification. So we'll have all that data. We won't be displaying it specifically on the transcript.
Thank you.
Later this morning, we're going to be talking about making sure that we retain high expectations. And I want to make sure that as we recognize, create alternatives to for students to satisfy requirements, that we're not dumbing down the requirements. I recognize not all kids are going to meet the requirements through a traditional test-taking mode. And we need to have alternatives for that, but I think we absolutely need to retain a high expectation at this level, probably more important than any other level, since this is the final accreditation that they're going to get from Jeffco. So how can we make sure that all of these alternatives are going to meet that expectation in particular, the capstone requirement, because that's probably the least objective of the alternatives that we're presenting.
So with the capstone, we have several partnerships and work groups that we have, and we're partnering with CEI. A couple of schools are working with CEI to work on that. We're also bringing in four schools to partner with that. So we've set the expectation to say, here's where it is, and then we're working with schools to say, how is that working for you, to set the expectation and the bar and saying that this is the bar for that. Capstones have to meet that bar for Jeffco. That's the expectation that we're setting with the rubric and the common expectations.
And I'm a huge fan of capstones, and I don't think it's dumbing down at all. I actually think it is raising the bar. I have now seen three different permutations of it, and I've also sat through a panel where someone didn't quite meet the mark and how challenging that was, and then to sit through a redo, and that is raising the bar of seeing someone who spent so much time on this to then say it's not quite there, to then put more time in to with that follow through, the work ethic, processing what wasn't quite there, to come back and do another redo. That to me is someone I want to hire. I want them in my schools. That was amazing. And clearly someone who had some challenges getting through the process. So I do believe that it is something that raises the bar for all students. And I would like to see more and more students have that opportunity. I recognize the challenges. And I'm learning a lot about it quickly in terms of how do you integrate the math and English component into that. And that is a challenge. And so thank you for putting great people on this challenge, because I am confident that we're going to figure out a way to do that, that keeps that bar or elevates it. Because I understand what Brad is saying, and I think there's two ways to look at that, but I am confident with the people we have working on this, we are rising to that level and making it accessible to what I'm going to say all students. We might need some scaffolding in place, and I challenge that's the work that really needs to be done to ensure that that bar stays there and that more kids have the opportunity to get there. So that might be a capstone class. That might be starting earlier, and some students can start in their senior year, some kids maybe starting in their sophomore year, but to create that opportunity, and I'm not saying that standardized tests aren't important, but I feel that in terms of where we are looking at our levels of learning and global integration and everything else, the things that I have seen at all different levels of students in this process has been incredible, and I just think that's just going to grow. What schools are piloting the capstones? Can I ask that?
Yeah, I have the information. Somewhere.
Sorry, I didn't put you on the spot there.
Sorry. So Arvada High School and Jeffco Open are partnering with CEI to work on that development process. And then we have McLean, Conifer, Jefferson, Alameda, and Brady to do some of the in-house piloting of the requirements that we have.
That's great. And you know, my point about the accommodation piece too, I recognize that's a struggle for everyone, but this should be available for all students, and I certainly don't want to put principals in a position of having to check a box of opting people out. That's a last resort from my perspective, recognizing that that's something that we need to have there, but I am confident that this is another area where we're just going to rise, create that level and scaffolding so that more students can get there.
And I would just add to Brad's point that that the ensuring the rigor is going to be important, and that making sure that teachers have the support that they need to go into, because you're going to have to put more trust in the professional in the room, and I believe adamantly that they are capable of doing it. I think the challenge is it can't be summarized into a single number that says you made it or you didn't. It does require the professional in the room to make a more subjective judgment on the work, but I think seeing is believing, and I hope you saw that when you were at the presentations at the Open School, because students really, I would agree that this is, in my opinion, more rigorous, but I'm obviously biased towards that.
Well, that's exactly the reason I asked the question, is that I listened to presentations at the Open School, and to be sure, I was really impressed by the presentations of the two students that I was able to witness. But I am not just listening to that half hour or so of presentation didn't tell me whether or not the particular student acquired and demonstrated 12 years of mathematics learning. You don't have an opportunity to see that much depth in a presentation. The other student, remarkable experience, remarkable presentation skills, communication skills, but is that all we are measuring as far as getting an English MET credit for graduation? I think when we're looking at testing, it goes into a much greater depth of knowledge, and it's hard to achieve that, demonstrating that depth of knowledge in a half-hour presentation capstone project.
Yeah, I think the presentation is a component of a really multifaceted project. So there is a portfolio, and there's a lot of background work that goes into the development of that. One of the documents that has been developed over the course of the year is basically a set of best practices or promising practices that is sort of the procedural steps that get you to a formal presentation, but the presentation itself is only a single component of a really multifaceted approach. Also, in those presentations that were given the other night, that some of those would have met the English requirement but not be focused on nor attempting to meet the math requirement. And then there were other presentations that were demonstrations that would have met the math requirement, but were not designed to, or nor were they attempting to meet the English requirement. So the way that that would be manifest at Open in particular is either an English focused or a math focused.
Yeah, I would say that I got to see one of each. And that's actually what raises the question. And if we're piloting this in, 10 or a dozen schools, the second question that I raise is, because this is pretty subjective, what kind of criteria are we going to be put in front of the teacher to make sure that the project is achieving these objectives? We need a level of systemness, as Ali says, to make sure that the experience that's happening at Arvada High School is the same experience that's going to happen at Jeffco Open or Brady or one of the other alternatives. So we need to have a level of systemness that gives us the confidence that this really is a certification that warrants the use of that word.
Yeah, I agree with that entirely. And the pilot work that has been done is really laying the foundation for that. And then the pilots is really testing that in action and sort of working out the kinks of that.
I
just want to highlight, and I sat through two different ones. The volume of work that goes into these projects that we as board members have just seen the presentation of. One group that I went through gave us the laptop so you could see their entire portfolio of work product that went into that piece, and that's where I was really blown away that sometimes I think even our community that sits on these cabinets doesn't recognize all of the depth of all of the other pieces that go into that. So thank you for highlighting that piece. The presentation is amazing, but what went into that project and why I think it's daunting for a lot of students, because it is a lot of work. That was my scaffolding point, but thank you.
I've got two comments. I need a point of clarification.
Please be efficient. We are already over on this agenda item.
So, Mr. Fugita, on the current requirements, it says 3 math, and then on the transcript, it says 2 geometry or higher. I'm assuming it means, because algebra is a prereq for geometry, so that would be the third credit that's counting for high school?
Correct.
I just wanted to clarify that. And then I'm wondering, as a parent, how are you feeling as the communication is going so the parents know the requirements, the new requirements? Because I feel like as a freshman parent, I'm going to need to be on it when my kid's a freshman to make sure. I'm wondering just how are you feeling like we've been doing, what more could we do to make sure that parents understand the depth and the breadth of the new requirements?
I'm going to let any of the principals, they're the ones who are charged with sort of that communication piece, so any communication that they've done.
Wait a minute.
Okay, so I'll just speak to what we have done so far, but we definitely need to finalize a system for our district so that we have something that's, consistent among schools. We have presented the new requirements to our SAC committee. So at the parent level, that's what we've done right now, but our students definitely know that for this current freshman class, they have taken home literature on the new requirements and what it means. They've also really been able to look at that practice PSAT, which was the first time the freshmen have taken that, and set some goals and further set some goals once we have those results for this first class taking them. So they will understand what kinds of expectations by the time they get to their junior level. So we put a lot of levity in that piece of it, preparing them for the PSAT to take it seriously and to also do their best. But, as we iron out what exactly will be put in place for our school, that is when we will be able to kind of communicate out to parents and say, here's the plan for this. But that's what we've done so far.
Okay. And I hope that, this is an additional, you got to be on this as mm-hmm. counselors and principals from day one to make sure kids are on track to graduate. Mm-hmm. And so I hope that you can communicate with us or everybody, anyone that you need to communicate with, if this is a lot, we need additional resource type of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't help myself. So I have an existing high school student under the old standards, and I have an incoming freshman under the new standards. So I will be your guinea pig, and this could be your worst nightmare. But I will say that it is a heavy lift for our school counselors, because they are managing kids through a system under the old requirements and then switching and providing information to parents on the new requirements, and it affects everything from pathways to this. It's not just one simple, is it 23 credits? And so thank you, because for parents that have kids on two different systems, it's very confusing. And you literally need two different pamphlets, two different things, it relates to what your kid started. I will say that consistently through the eighth graders, information did go out. It did, I think, across the board. What that means to those kids is a little confusing because they're not quite there yet, but in terms of parent information, you are absolutely right. And I've also received parent information about what that looks like and what we're doing as a district, and I think that's the important piece for parents, is to let parents know that we are working on it, and this will unfold in your school. But generally, here's the difference, but it's a heavy lift for the counselors. And I would hate to be creating anxiety for students as opposed to the message, this is a great opportunity for you. This is not an additional heavy lift. This is a way to really showcase your talents and your abilities, because we know that you all have those through our system.
I'll try to keep my questions brief. I appreciate you giving me the time for them. A couple things are happening with graduation guidelines. One is we're not retiring Carnegie units. We are still holding those for students. There's a couple reasons for that. A, we're still learning how to do graduation guidelines. Secondly, we also know that many students are intending to attend community college or a four-year program, and they will have expectations around what students enter with regarding those Carnegie units. So we can't just release that because that isn't gone from students' lives. So it raises for me the recognition that this is both a bureaucratic exercise as well as a pathway to individualized access to their life goals. We have to do both of those, and we have to do them well. So when it comes to the bureaucratic side, I will be wanting to know as we move forward if having multiple assessments or standardized measures for students to access is bridging gaps for kids, or is it a redundancy? If we're not seeing that we're getting another 5 or 10% of our students to fulfill those graduation guidelines, then we are increasing their test time, and probably those students who least need to lose their class time to more standardized tests, they're going to take two or three or four different things. I also, and I don't want to see that happen to them, it may dilute resources. I'm not sure who's paying for what. I know that right now, we can assume that we're going to take care of PSAT and SAT. What's going to happen as the district delivers ASVAB, ACT, ACT work keys, various tools for the standardized assessment, and will there be shared understanding of where that cost lands on families as a fee, on the school district? I don't know about that. And again, this is where we really need to pay attention to how much we're closing gaps with having the redundancy of standardized measures. Or should we go all in and say our intention is for our students to be prepared for the SAT, recognizing that that will still do a disservice to students on an individualized education plan. And that is a gross reality of our system. And maybe we could work to change that. But none of that gets to the level of the individualized access to life goals. This is, to me, where ICAP matters. The kind of interactions that teachers, advisors, and counselors are having with individual students to know what we need to give them. You know, when I hear information about AP, we will not be doing transformative work for students, they will not be doing transformative learning, if all we manage is to reproduce in our outputs the same results to gatekeepers, which is really what we're looking at right now. The reason AP coursework correlates to better grades in college is because AP has been a filtering system, not an empowering system. So how are we going to take these tools and make them empowering? So on that note, Capstone for All is the right thing, not just because we want all kids to have that experience, but because we really aim to deliver to all kids every one of those generations' values, generations' descriptors. So it's a lot of information. My guess is you guys don't have yet, but we need them. We need them when it comes to resources to know how much we're creating redundancies and excess costs and diluting our focus. I don't want to lose sight of the fact that my hope is we'll be moving more and more of our students to that level of performing where we aim for them to be to manage an SAT score that handles it for them. The reason, Mr. James, I appreciate you saying highlighting the fact that delivering the AP coursework is not just another opportunity to give these kids a checked box on grad guidelines, but it's to elevate the work that they're doing, the learning they're doing, so that they will also be demonstrating multiple success points. And that's my hope, is that we navigate the bureaucracies. We do so meaningfully, and we take that as an opportunity to do a lot more and a lot better, which you all do every day, by the way, so thank you. Mr. Bain, at your night of exhibitions, what I saw wasn't the right rubric, right? It's just a rubric. It's just a tool. What I saw was students engaged in relevant, passionate learning. I saw advisors. I saw peers that held them accountable. It was all of that together. And the fact that you teach kids how to think about their own thinking and performance. It's not just the score they'll get from me on the rubric, it's how they score themselves on that. It's how they understand their next steps. Look, I rode the conveyor belt. A lot of our kids can just ride the conveyor belt. I think they deserve better than a conveyor belt. And we certainly can't afford to allow kids to fall off the conveyor belt because they can't perform at certain levels, but oh, we'll catch them with this secondary. We can do better than that. So it's going to be interesting a year from now when you all come back and tell us what you've learned. Because right now, I'm anxious to see that we do something empowering, not just filtering for our kids.
I think at this time I'm going to try to bring closure to this presentation. I do want to say to all of our panelists, thank you for the information. And I think I can speak for our whole board when I say we appreciate the work that you are doing. To try to ensure that our students are prepared to live in the world that they will live their future in. So thank you, each and every one of you, for this good work.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Is this a single page? Yeah. So we can run it around the table.
Yes.
Let's do that. I'll just do it now.
Yeah, well, that whole package is a pretty
thing. Oh, it's one packet.
Yeah.
Do you want to pass them all out?
Yeah. Well, I think if you guys just have one set over the board, if you
okay.
Want to refer to them.
All right. All right. Thank you very much. Our we'll move on to 2.02 on this study session.
This next item, our now regular progress report on the district's strategic priorities in the form of stock takes. This stock take is aligned to the high expectations tactic. As a reminder, we heard presentations on the strategic plan and system indicators on February 1 and March 1. The stock take adds additional detail and precision on the tactics identified on the strategic plan. Dr. Glass, do you have anything you'd like to add to that?
Yeah, just a brief process check-in. We extended the timing for all of our stock takes from 25 minutes to 40 minutes, just from where we are in the life cycle of these. We're still spending a lot of time wrapping our heads around conceptually what are we trying to do and get clarity around that, and that just takes more time than we've given. I think going forward, it may be a year, maybe 2 years, we will get to that shorter timeline once we're down to sort of more routine, but right now we just decided to add more time to all of them to give you more processing time.
Thank you, Dr. Glass. And with that, welcome, Ms. Steele. Welcome, Mr. McDermott. Let's begin the stock take.
Great. Thank you, guys. Just in a similar note to Dr. Glass's point, we really want to invite critical questions and pressure testing of our thinking on this, especially as in our first iteration of each time the tactic comes in front of Cabinet and the board, we really welcome your critical feedback on that. So today, with high expectations, we're really going to be focusing on something that just came up in the last presentation, this level of systemness to ensure that each student has the ability to work against high expectation curriculum in a high expectation environment. My clicker's not going. Yeah. You got a new clicker? Oh, there we go. All right. Just the structure of our conversation, we're going to start with the question of what are we trying to do, and I'll start that off a little bit from the macro level. There we go. So each of the tactics and the priorities in the strategic plan really does focus on having students engage in authentic learning experience. And our high expectations tactic falls within the conditions for learning and really works to ensure that all students have the opportunity to interact with high expectation learning environments and high expectation curriculum. And the high expectation tactic, along with all tactics, really is falls within a larger structure which focuses on the alignment of our mission, vision, values to achieve aspirational results. And you can see the tactic level, we're in the conditions for learning down at the bottom there. And those aspirational results, we benchmarked against our highest performing neighbors to come up with our system indicators. These represent some fairly traditional academic indicators. And additionally, we have JEFCO specific, which reflect JEFCO values of closing achievement gaps and college and career readiness, as well as non-academic indicators, which reflect positive experiences for our employees, our students, and our families. And with that, I am proud to turn it over to Jen.
Thank you. Good morning, and thank you for meeting with us this morning, and we know this is a gift of time. We also know that high expectations are one of the major topics that you just completed as you were thinking through how in the world we keep those expectations high in capstone projects and other pathways for learning. And so it's probably good timing for us to follow that most current presentation. So how are we trying to do this? I think the first piece is a mindset around when we say all children, we mean all children, right? Not the ones we wish we had, not the ones we had last year, but those children who are with us every single day, every year. And so that is no small feat. That is, we have high aspirations, but it's because of the sense of urgency around the needs of our students and ensuring that we have some calibration across our system around those expectations that we are so heavily focused on. Setting these high expectations as a system. So, just so you know, our theory of action and our SMART goals have changed. maybe four times in the last week based on work, based on feedback. And I'm not embarrassed to say that. That really is a part of this process, right? So as we've met with cabinet, as we've met with all leadership, as our tactic team came together, we have tweaked and refined this. So right now, we believe that we're at a point where we are focusing both on the alignment of our curriculum to Colorado Academic Standards and the JEFCO Generation Skills, and then the implementation of that curriculum for all students. When we look at our SMART goals, they too have been adjusted. Actually, the implementation SMART goal now is relatively fresh and new. And you'll see that on that second implementation, we have actually extended the time factor. So instead of by May of 2020, we put 2024, because our system is large and we want to do this well and do it right, and that will take some time. We also want to continue to collaborate with our central colleagues and all of our school-based colleagues and add students and families to this process. When you link on that high expectations rubric, I just want you to know that's an example, right? It's a such as, might look something like this. Some of the feedback we received Thursday night from the tactic team, from principals, was please don't give principals one more tool that they have to use when they go in classrooms. Potentially consider the look fors in the teacher evaluation rubric. Others said please don't align this to a rubric. And so as a team, as we continue to collect that work around whatever tool is developed, it'll be central teams who will collect that data. We will not put that, not that schools can't participate with us, but it won't be an additional responsibility for our school leaders to collect this data for us. And of course, I could not neglect our generation skills. Because really, the curriculum is our what, and these generation skills are around our how, right? This is where we breathe life into our learning, and one of the big adjustments for our JEFCO curriculum within Bridge to Curriculum will be around connecting and implementing and including generation skills within our units of study. And as we take a look at the milestones, some of that work always pops right out at me. So we all know that the Colorado Academic Standards are in its revision process and that the State Board is starting to make some moves to either approve or to hear amendments on the content standards for each of our content areas. So we're in a holding pattern at the moment, but we know that as soon as those standards are the updates are approved, then that's great. We'll be poised to partner with teachers in our system to update our units of study and the academic standards that are connected to those. We know that professional learning communities are a vital way for teachers to plan together, down to that task level, and also thinking through their formative assessments that they're collecting along the way to provide them with that ongoing day-to-day feedback that helps them to adjust, monitor, and adjust instruction for students. So the other piece that usually has come up just in this last week is really around the ability for our teachers to upload resources and assessments within Bridge to Curriculum. We had some great conversation in cabinet about should those be vetted, should they not. Currently, the process is that teachers, they are our experts within our classrooms, and teachers, coaches, principals, support service providers, they all have the opportunity to upload with their resources and assessments, and then other colleagues across the system then are open to go in and review and, you know, use these resources and assessments to tweak them to make them their own, and also to provide some feedback, either this really worked out well, I did this and this to make it work, And then a star rating. So we do have that star rating system. So Thursday night, we wrestled with the whole piece around vetting of those resources and assessments. So that's a work in progress. We know that some support and, guidance is needed because that's something very brand new for us.
So just a quick check-in on the nomenclature that we're using here. So you may recall the theory of action is the if-then statement. If we do this, then this will happen. The SMART goal is how we'll measure those things. Milestones refer to necessary action steps that have to be taken if we're going to achieve the goal. So just wanted to clarify, what's a milestone? What are we talking about here?
Yes. Yep. Okay, thank you. So then we have wrestled also, this may or may not work. Can you advance the slide? Tried. All right. So thank you. So as we think through leading indicators.
And then clarity. So a leading indicator is a sort of a smaller micro level measure as to are those steps taking place and how are we measuring the milestone steps?
Thank you. So, as we are looking to both revise the Colorado our units of study and the standards that are embedded within Bridge to Curriculum, we knew that we needed to keep track of where those standards connect directly. There's a lot of connections behind the scenes within the JECO curriculum. So if you open up a third grade math unit of study, from the teacher view, you are able to see the standards that are embedded within that unit of study. You don't necessarily always see the connection between where that standard lives and in what students should know, understand, and be able to do. That work is done on the back end within the system, and so some of the work that we need to keep track of is where are a crosswalk between our current curriculum connections to the standards and the work that will need to be done. We're also trying to keep track. We're collecting baseline data right now around the resources and assessments that are being uploaded into Bridge to Curriculum. And one of the big messages we're sharing is everything that's in there that's a resource or assessment can be rated and commented on. So things that our central colleagues have created and that are up there are more than, our colleagues here at CENT are more than willing to and eager to receive feedback so that we can refine our work on our end as well. So, and then the 4 and 5 star rating, we'll keep track of those as well. On the TLCC survey, as we listen to our teachers, this one indicator around the diverse academic needs of our students are met by this school's current curriculum that sure seemed to apply and is something that we can focus on. We have both the state data and JEFCO data around that indicator, and the diverse academic needs speaks once again to all of our students. The parent family survey, we're still having conversations about this particular one, but we're hoping that by sharing our JEFCO curriculum with our public audience, in addition to several supports for families to understand the expectations for content areas in different grade levels, this will actually become an indicator that helps us keep the pulse on the way that we're partnering with our community. All right, so at any given moment, how will we know if we're on track? So even though the first SMART goal is one SMART goal, we've actually broken that out into two separate trajectories because one is about the Colorado Academic Standard and the other component of that SMART goal is around the JEFCO generation skills. So it made sense for us to focus on those two areas, even though they're largely connected, to break those out into two separate trajectories. So we have some baseline data up here around our JEFCO curriculum and resources connected to these revised Colorado academic standards. And we have that initial point at 20% because we, having read all of the rough drafts, we have a pretty good idea about how many adjustments need to be made. And we know that in some areas, we won't have some adjustments because the academic standards didn't change all that much. So that's an optimistic, right? It's just kind of our starting point. based on the reviews. And we have several JEFCO colleagues and Shauna Fritzler, one of our parents, who have served on these academic standard review committees.
Just a quick point of clarification. So the new Colorado academic standards, those have not yet been finalized. So those are going to be coming out. So that's why you see currently when we're at about 20% of our curriculum as aligned to the Colorado academic standards, it's because there are going to be new standards that are being released this spring. So there's going to be a process over the next couple of years of aligning our bridge to curriculum to the new academic standards.
All righty. So our next trajectory specifically focuses on the generation skills. And so we did have some very small baseline data from 16-17 because those generation skills started within JEFCO as the 2020 competencies. And so there was some initial work that was done, very baseline to support those competencies within the JEFCO curriculum. The 17-18 school year data I just calculated last night, and we're at about 18%. So right now we have 7,271 resources and assessments in Bridge to Curriculum to support PK-12. And out of those 7,271, we have 1,327 of those resources and assessments that have been tagged or linked directly to the JEFCO generation skills. So that is right now one of the ways that we're collecting this data. Please know that one of our, you'll see it here in a minute, one of our challenges is the ongoing funding to continue to update Bridge to Curriculum. From the teacher standpoint, from several access points that they have requested, but also to be able to pull some back-end data out of there without doing the large calculation work. It would just be nice, and then I think it would be nice also for schools to have that opportunity to understand from the back end what's actually there and available. All right, so then our newest SMART goal, newly revised, is really around monitoring the implementation of the JEFCO curriculum, which are the Colorado academic standards and the JEFCO generation skills, paced over time across the school year and across the years, right, across PK-12. And so we're very much at baseline data collection. We're trying to figure out what that tool will be and who those teams will be to go out and collect data. The baseline will be collected in 2018-2019 because we have not yet done that part. Okay, so this is our heat map right now. And this too has changed over this last week on and off. I can say that for the planning phase, we have some challenges in the fact that we, you know, our school year goes until the end of May, and then we have a 3-month time where some work can take place here around the planning, building capacity, and we also don't want that to be the sole work of Central, right? We want to do that work in collaboration with teachers and leaders and also with our community. So we don't want to get too far down the tracks. We want to carry this vision forward, but we don't want to get so far down the road that we haven't included our key stakeholders. And one of those stakeholders is students. So we're working our way through those pieces. The capacity building, you know, that'll be work that will need to take place with our entire system, which is exciting work to think through the partnership side by side with our teacher colleagues. As an original author of our JEFCO curriculum, that was not how our curriculum was drafted in the first place. And so to actually have our stakeholders be a part of this process is, I think it's beneficial for everyone. So successes. One of the things that's happened because of all of this tactic work, right? You can set all the high expectations you want, but if we're not partnering with the learning tactics or the readiness for learning tactics or other conditions for learning tactic teams, then this would just sit off to the side and we could say, yep, we have a lovely curriculum and we've done all this work, but we don't know how it's impacting students. So we've built so many partnerships with colleagues across our central offices here, which may seem like an interesting comment, but you know, there's so much, the volume of work and the need is so large that sometimes we don't have an opportunity to connect with one another. And the strategic plan is has opened those doors wide because we all see our work involved in our tactic work, including especially high expectations. So our district UIP has priority improvement challenges that have been defined. We've spent time together with the District Accountability Committee creating those action steps. And so I just wanted to make the point here that all of that work of the district UIP also has tentacles in the work of high expectations. And so we are constantly as a team trying to go back and just check in, take the pulse of, you know, where are those connections and how are we supporting those along the way. We will be sharing the Jeffco curriculum on our public website. You can currently see 10th grade and 5th grade for examples of those. 5th grade was our starter grade because there were resources around growing and changing that were being requested from the community, and it made sense to start there so that parents had and our community had easy access. The hope behind that is that parents will be invited to play a part in their a greater part in their students' learning by knowing what those targets are, what their students should know, understand, and be able to do. And because curriculum documents are curriculum documents and not as easily accessible for parents and families, we've partnered and have included the national PTAs, parent and community guides, for each of those grade levels and the content areas. And then we're working with Marizana Research Laboratory. We keep meeting with them around the need for calibrating the understanding of what those expectations are for each grade level, each content area. One of the other, so some of that work really started around standards-based grading and revising the elementary report card. And really turned into, wow, as a system, we don't have a calibrated understanding ourselves around even standards-based grading. And as we're considering things like capstones and how you provide academic whether they are meeting or exceeding on our transcripts, this work becomes vital from PK all the way through 12th grade. So we'll be working with them on proficiency scales. And if we're not on track, so let's look at some of our challenges. One of the things that we know that's vital to this work is that we work side by side with our colleagues in our schools. And another thing we know is that we don't want to encourage our teachers, nor are they excited about leaving their classrooms and leaving their students for some of the work. So there's a balance there that we're trying to figure out how much is virtual work that we do, you know, through Google Hangout or Google Docs, and how much of it, needs to be face-to-face. So we're working on those pieces. One of the things that we talked about even in cabinet was the fact that right now we have curriculum content specialists that specialize in one content area, but they also know our curriculum deeply, and they understand the structure of it, and they understand the implementation ramifications, and so some of our content area colleagues will be working on curriculum revisions for content areas that are not their own and continuing to partner around the industry certificates and capstone projects and where the core content area standards are being met within those. So there's some agility and adaptability happening with all of our adults as well. And, you know, that last bullet there is around the equity focus. We have such strong variability between our sometimes teachers across the hall from each other and sometimes from building to building across the system. We have a really large system and over 86,000 students who are relying on this work, this important work, to calibrate those expectations and so that students meet or exceed. And that's the language we're using, students. We want students to meet or exceed those standards. And so as we think about resources, so once again, there's that, how do you balance partnering with colleagues in schools, but also honoring the work that they do and the fact that it's difficult to be away from their students and their teams. You know, the funding piece, it's one thing if we engage in this work with the Marzano Research Lab around proficiency scales for not only academics, but also for our generation skills, but also the ongoing work around what is standards-based grading, what does that look like in kindergarten versus seventh grade, and how do we include students in that process? How are students involved in keeping track of their progress over time, regardless of their age, and setting goals for themselves as learners and then celebrating their growth along the way? And of course, bridge to curriculum. We have a quite a list of requests for that, and we're trying to prioritize those requests. And so we'll see where that takes us. So it's a big topic, but it is a vital topic.
Okay, I think questions, comments, board members, am I correct on where we are on the agenda here? Okay.
I would like to back us way back up to the theory of action, because I sometimes when these theories of actions are presented, it's they don't necessarily follow.
Can you advance back or move back to it on the screen?
I certainly understand that the premise is that if we align standards and or align our activities with our standards and the skills that we want our kids to engage in, it's the then that I have trouble with. The then, in my view, ought to be then we're going to have kids that actually graduate with the competencies and knowledge that we want. The goal isn't for teachers to facilitate challenging and engaging learning. I think our theory is that if they do that, the outcomes will be better. And it's the outcomes that I think are our goals here, not the inputs.
Yeah, we've wrestled with this question a great deal internally, too. And I think we ran to the outcome measures as a starting point. But then I think our realization was that our system academic indicators and our system holistic indicators are built on that very element. So if you go a step even further back, you've got those system indicators that ratchet all the way up. And we really felt like doing that again here in the theory of action might be redundant. So it's sort of if you had the alignment done and it was actually being implemented, then we'd see the system indicators move as to how the logic is set up. But we've struggled with this. Where does the outcome fit in the equation too? Where we settled was it's already in the system outcomes.
And I'll just add one thing to that. And I think, and Jen hit on this, is anecdotally, and I'm sure you guys have seen it when you visit schools, there's a lot of variability in terms of the expectations and the use of bridge to curriculum. And that's something that we have noticed as a challenge in the system. So I think before getting directly to an outcome statement in terms of academic success, we had to start with a process statement of then we're going to see more consistency in the implementation. And then as Dr. Glass mentioned, we ultimately believe that that will lead to the system indicators, which reflect the academic outcomes. But it is also part of the where we are in this process of right now there's a lot of variability, and we want to focus on ensuring that at a minimum all students have access to a high expectation learning environment.
The tactic team also wrestled with this last week, and one of the things that they kept going back to is we are setting conditions for learning, and we partner with every one of the other tactics that are under learning that have direct goals and measurements around the student achievement component. And so just thinking through that lens of we're setting the conditions so that the learning tactics, the readiness for learning, that their work will show those student academic growth over time and non-academic growth over time.
I hear you. Thank you. Yes, we hope to see it in the system indicators. Nonetheless, it seems to me like in the theory of action, in the SMART goals, and in the leading indicators, there is a weightedness toward central admin work instead of really classroom-centered work. And there's a focus on teacher-centered work instead of student-centered work. And I want to push up against that again. I do think that, yes, it won't change for students if teachers don't have those right practices. So then I would lean in toward teacher-led work, not just central admin work. It seems to me like the learning labs that you all are going to identify in each and every school are a great opportunity for that feedback loop to be complete, that it's not just going to be bridge to curriculum resources aligned, but that there will also be opportunities to call out classrooms and schools that are already doing work that's effective there and make sure that the whatever barriers and silos are there are broken down so that other teachers and students access them. It's been a few years since some of this information was publicly available, but there are school communities that have already done a better job in JEFCO at having more narrow achievement gaps between their FRL kids and their other kids. Sometimes it's a programming reality. Sometimes we're already hyper-filtering kids to the degree that you can have 80%+ of the kids that are not qualifying for free and reduced lunch hit many of those system indicators, but maybe only 20% of the kids that are FRL are hitting those. But there are other school communities where that gap is more narrow. And so for me, I do think there's room to tease out school and classroom work that is doing it, highlight it, and reproduce it with a recognition that the variability is the problem. So let's highlight and strengthen the impact of the positive variability. Where schools and classrooms are doing it, lean in there. Because, in the same way that I'm also excited for the Marzano Research Partnership, because I think that can inform from outside of this system some of the outputs that we hope eventually to see. But I also recognize that standards-based report cards have not revolutionized student learning. So what I want to know is that we don't wait to achieve the consistency, the resources. We have got to push forward on the stuff that we can both see in students and their outcomes at the same time that we create the conditions that you're talking about. And I would like to see it somewhere in one of the SMART goals.
So just a couple of quick reactions to that. The theory of action here is if teachers and district leaders align. And so it's not central effort. It's not a completely centrally driven work. It's a cooperative work to look at what's happening in the classroom with the curriculum, and then how does the district's curricular system align to that? How is that informed by both the standards and from the practitioner? And then the second part around, is that actually being delivered in the classroom? That's a collaborative work too. So it's sort of both and working with central and at the practitioner level at the same time.
I definitely see that. I think that's part of why I think there's room for an additional SMART goal that pushes into that a little bit more.
So this should be, this is one tactic of your overall strategic plan. You also have one around transform the student task, which goes directly to what is the student experiencing. Is that aligned to high expectations? Is that at a high level? And so this part of, the grander, broader theory of change might be stated sort of, if we had a curriculum that was aligned to high standards and that was being delivered in the classroom on a consistent basis, and the experiences of the students were aligned to those high standards, then we would be a high-performing system. So it's sort of broken out into different tactic elements. And this one, we even talked at our conversation around how does this fit with the transform the student task tactic? Is that the same work? Is it different work? And so that's a question we're wrestling with right now.
You know, maybe one of the things that could happen in future stock takes, because you're right, and I can totally release that desire to see something more direct to students in classrooms in a SMART goal for this one. Could you elevate when there is that kind of keen overlap So that as we're looking at the SMART goals here for this tactic, which really are more professional practice oriented, you will highlight, by the way, we think this is contributing directly to what we're seeing in students here. That might help.
And that was feedback we also received Tuesday from all leadership. Please don't continue to focus on the individual components without building those bridges for us so that we can see where that work is interconnected. Yes.
I had a few comments. There is variability, and what I've seen in my school visits is there's huge variability in resources. So that as a variable, I wonder if there's, and that has to do with equity. Mm-hmm. And you have equity in here, but I'm wondering if that needs to be more defined so we can really address, or maybe you already have that defined, but I just wasn't seeing it in here. But that, and then there's also variability in the ability to collaborate and at different levels, and I see that more in elementaries and our smaller schools. And so I think the ability to collaborate for our educators is just huge. I would love to go peruse through Bridge Through Curriculum, but if you're saying there's 1,700 lessons in there, I'm
a login, no problem.
Pardon?
Get you a login. Yeah.
That would be great. I would love to check it out. But you said you were linking some of those to your generation's document, and I'm assuming that those are the vetted, wonderful, excellent, authentic experiences that you have seen so far, or you have evaluated so far. I'm hoping Bridges to Curriculum is overwhelming, you know, for an educator, and to go through and like, oh my God, especially first 5 years when you're really trying to figure it all out. But I love that you're linking I would love to hear more about what you're linking instead of assuming what you're linking.
Absolutely.
So. Yeah.
We can even set up a time to sit side by side.
Okay, that would be great. I want to reemphasize what Amanda said about find out where this is happening, because these great things are happening in our schools. And instead of reinventing wheels, let's try to expand on the great things that are happening. So that's it.
Okay, yes, side by side. With our colleagues in our schools is vital, because you're right, that's where the work is taking place right now. We currently have some learning labs that are taking place around the implementation of Lucy Calkins' reading units of study. And so this last week, some of our central staff and then staff at Mortensen hosted learning lab mornings, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. So we are trying to capture those promising practices and then make them reproducible so that they can spread across our system.
And I just want to call out your success. Not on. Your success slide on the partnering with the ESL, GT, SPED. I think that's critically important in terms of this bridge to curriculum, which seems like, again, this thing that we refer to. And I will just say, putting my parent hat on, that thing had no meaning to me. But when I'm in buildings, hearing about better ways to access the bridge to curriculum or make it more meaningful across the board, looking at your success slide, those were things that I did hear. So thank you for focusing on that, that I think that voice needed to be heard, and that is an area that does make it more successful for differentiated learning and sharing ideas. So thank you.
Anything else, colleagues? I would,
sorry.
Go ahead, Tom. I do want to make a comment.
Just one last thing that I just wanted to elevate and celebrate for Jen and her team. So with the new Colorado academic standards that are coming out, all districts across the state are going to be realigning to those academic standards. What's really innovative and exciting about the work that Jen and her team is doing is that they're not just aligning to those academic standards, they are infusing the generation skills, and they are making that part of we're trying to make that part of the everyday experience for all of our students by having it systematized in our curriculum database. So I just wanted to elevate that and celebrate, because it's different than what we're going to see from some of our neighboring districts across the state.
I did want to say that there is an intangible component of this whole thing about expectations. And if we went back to your first slide actually struck me as being fairly significant. My teacher thought I was smarter than I am, and I was. That's a powerful tool about what our educators believe about every child that they come in contact with in their classroom. And frankly, that's a powerful tool that ties in well with all this great work that we're doing. But it is built upon that foundation, I think, and I just wanted to mention that. We appreciate the information, the stock take updates. It's been a good update. Thank you both very much. And with that, we'll move on to our next agenda item. Our board, and you guys may, we'll transition a little bit here with needing different people at the table, but the Board of Education will now receive a draft meeting schedule of the next school year prior to formal approval of our meeting schedule in June. A draft schedule is prepared taking into consideration the following when possible. First Thursdays of each month, the first meeting after school begins, daytime study sessions, avoiding known conflicts, those are holidays, religious and otherwise, that are built into our calendar. In March, the board began piloting a meeting schedule through June of 2018, which changed the second Thursday evening study session to a daytime study session the Monday following the regular meeting. Dr. Glass, do you have anything you'd like to add before we begin this topic? What we are trying to do here is provide feedback and direction so that we can adopt a meeting schedule in June. We've been on a pilot schedule, and I think we probably should start with, well, how's that working for us? How do we feel about that?
I'd like to start off comments. First, I believe that the Monday following a Thursday is very quick, and I'm not sure it gives, I don't think it gives me opportunity to digest what's coming up if I'm focusing on a Thursday meeting and then doing the Monday. I would like to push it out, I don't know, possibly to the following Thursday so that we have meetings a week apart. I do like having meetings for our study sessions during the day. I think that's helpful to me.
So I just want to capture the point that Mr. Rupert was making. You would be okay with pushing our study session daytime meeting out a couple more days to perhaps as much as a week later. So we'd be doing Thursday night and then Thursday morning study sessions. Might be more effective in your opinion. Others, we need to address those specific issues.
Sure, absolutely. I find the daytime meeting as a success model for me. I actually like having them condensed. So I process and look at both meetings and go through it and deal with it. Understanding that for my sense is that for some people that's too short a time. I would be fine moving it a day or two, but the week block in between, for me, I just feel like I then spend time redoing. I spend twice as much time. So that's just me. So I would prefer to have it condensed. I like that model and that process, but happy to build, you know, additional time in there so that people aren't feeling they need to work over the weekend.
I would agree. I like having one day meeting for me selfishly. I've been able to attend two of my kids' Thursday night events that I had to skip last year and the year before, but I was able to do it this year, just the past 2 months, and I really appreciate that. So that's me being selfish. The Monday is way too soon. So I would appreciate more time to digest what happened on a Thursday meeting, because we've had some pretty big Thursday meetings. They're all big. They're all very important. And sometimes I need to process and digest and then gear up for the next meeting. For me, I think a week apart would be fine, would work best. Anything sooner, I just digesting what happened at a meeting and preparing for the next meeting for me is a process that I would appreciate 1 week for.
Ms. Stevens.
Thumbs up. I concur. Daytime has been great for study sessions. I'm flexible on which day of the following week the study session falls on. So,
I guess I should weigh in on this one too. It's, you know, what all five of us think. I also like the daytime study sessions. If that works for our cabinet, you know, certainly I think it works for me, and I'm hearing that it works for our board. I find the timeline that we're on from Thursday to Monday, and I'm sorry to say this, Ms. Harmon, but I find it tight and would like to lengthen the time in there, not more than a week, but certainly I would like to lengthen it a little bit, and I don't know if there's a compromise in there, or would it be easier for our public to understand that we are meeting on the first Thursday, having a business meeting, and we're meeting on the following Thursday in study session. That might be an easy concept to communicate. And so I kind of like that. But I don't know, and I would ask Dr. Glass, do you think, and Helen, do you think that Thursday meetings would work into, and I know that our entire cabinet has schedules and lots of meetings, and maybe we're running in conflict with that. I'd like to get some feedback on that before we provide direction.
Yeah, we can certainly accommodate this shift. It's looking into the fall, we've got enough time to probably move things and rearrange things to make Thursday during the day work fine. So we did that to make the Mondays work, frankly. So I think we can make this work fine.
Okay. I hate to be difficult, but do we have any concept recognizing that this is a pilot? How long? I honestly cannot miss an entire day of work on Thursday. So I need to know, are we making a commitment to finishing these at a certain time period? Because a change from Monday to Thursday is significant for me. You didn't ask that question, and it does sound personal, but I have to be able to make sure I can be at these meetings. So I recognize that this has been a pilot and some of our meetings have gone longer than we anticipated, and we're working with all of that. Do we have a goal in mind of what that day looks like in terms of truly a full day, meaning that many of us, our day ends at 3 for other reasons? So or what are we thinking? Because many of them have looked shorter and none of them have been shorter, and I take responsibility for that as well. But
Ms. Harmon, that's been true for every one of our meetings for 3 years, has it not?
Yeah.
It's
just late as opposed to during the day.
I want to clarify a part of your position. I'm searching for a compromise in here. Is it that Thursday is a bad day for you? And would, for example, just pulling this out of the air, would Wednesday be a better day for you?
And so all I was saying is when I looked at the agenda item for today, it looked like there was a question mark of you know, potentially any of those 4 days during the week. So I was just going to ask if my fellow board members, was it really critical that it was Thursday as opposed to Wednesday was my question. And if it is, that's fine. As opposed to, and same with Cabinet and to Helen, is as we get feedback, are there better days for Cabinet, and just in terms of a majority, rather than, I'm just going to have a difficulty locking in on Thursday right now today in this meeting is all I'm saying to you guys. So I'm just asking if that's an option. If that's an option. Okay. But I want to balance that with Cabinet and everyone else just across the board. I can make some changes, so I just want to know if that's an option while I look further down my schedule. Does that make sense?
Mr. Rupert, I'm wanting to check with you. Does a Wednesday seem fine in your mind?
And Dr. Glass, can we work cabinet around that kind of a schedule?
With enough advance notice, we can flex and make it work, yeah. And on the daytime meeting, we've tried to work to end around the lunchtime. We're learning around how much content we can build into the meetings, and as you've heard today, our president's trying to compress us into staying within our timeline. So I think we're working all those angles as we're learning here, but we're getting better.
We are. I know it's a pilot, and so I just want to throw that out there. Yep.
It is a process, Susan, and I think that, you know, we actually may have to if our workload stacks up. You know, I guess we always have the option to say, okay, can we agree to schedule another meeting? And I think what we're trying to do is hold these daytime meetings to ending around the lunch hour by 12:30. Hopefully no later than 1 o'clock, although we may have already violated that today, but it doesn't mean we're not working towards it.
No, and that's what I was asking.
So I think we're trying to finish around lunch hour, and what I'm hearing here, and I'm going to summarize this and see if you throw rocks. If you throw rocks, then we'll come up with another summary, but I think we're saying we like Thursday night meetings, we like the daytime meetings, and Wednesday the following week would be better than Thursday and probably accommodate the need for a little more time between the meetings for preparation and sort of mental thought transfer from one agenda to the other. So I think we're proposing Monday, Wednesday, and trying to finish by, I'm gonna say let's set our target goal at 12:30, knowing that it's, you know, I will try to move us along, and you guys will try to keep me from doing that from time to time. Is that a summary of where we are?
That'd be great. I appreciate that. Recognizing, I heard what you were saying, Thursday to Thursday is just easier for people to remember, so I'm not trying to put a cog in everyone else's wheel, but that would, I think that gives us the time, and it allows me to do the other stuff. Thanks.
I think we can launch a teaching campaign and train people to Thursday and Wednesday. So I think that's a direction for us. Ms. Neal, are you comfortable that we have provided that?
Thank you.
Thank you, colleagues. We'll work on finalizing that at our June meeting. And I'm going to suggest, even though we're tight on time, that we have been here about an hour and 40 minutes, so let's take a 5-minute recess at this time, and we'll come back to the table to finish our study session. Thank you.